Hi, I'm Marisa McClellan, author of Food in Jars.
And I'm Joy Manning, editor of Edible Philly.
Welcome to Local Mouthful. We're here to talk shop with obsessed home cooks everywhere. This week, we're talking about rice paper rolls, sheet pan, kale, and tomatoes, and suggesting some cookbooks that can help you get ready for Thanksgiving. But first, we've got some news, or at least Joy has some news. Joy, what's your news?
I am teaching a food writing course here in Philadelphia.
That's exciting. When does it start?
It starts on January 8th, and it runs through March 18th. It will be on Monday nights from 6 p.m. till 9 p.m. The class will take place in a new bookstore in my neighborhood on East Passyunk Avenue called A Novel Idea. It hasn't even opened yet. It's going to be open by January, though, they say. The cost of this 8-week course is $400, and there's financial aid available if you feel that you want to take the course, but it presents a hardship, and you can get all the information at bluestoop.org. And I think this is newsworthy because it's been a long time since I've taught.
Yeah.
I have taught journalism. I've taught creative nonfiction writing. And I have taught food writing, but not in years.
Well, I'm excited for you.
What I like about this is Bluestoop, I've taught usually at colleges in the past. And to be honest, I don't love working with a bunch of kids that are there because they sort of have to be, you know, as part of their...
A requirement.
I mean, like, kind of classes I teach were not typically, like, requirements, but they were still, like, school. Like, I don't... But anyway, I think Bluestoop is a writing organization that I think attracts older, like, people that are not just out of college, people that really want to be there, that really want to engage in writing, and, I will definitely be talking about writing for Edible Philly or writing for publication, but I also want to talk about, you know, writing for yourself, whether it's a blog or whether you want to put together a family cookbook. You know, there's a lot. You don't have to be a professional or an aspiring professional to get a lot of enjoyment out of writing about food. I feel like it's a very worthwhile thing to learn, not just learn, but practice, because everyone will be getting feedback. We'll be workshopping pieces together. We'll be looking at the different types of food writing. I think even if you just want to work your brain out, if you love food and you just want to like try something new, I think this could be a really great class. As I said before we started speaking, I was hoping that you'll come and do a, when I talk about blogs, that you'll come and be a guest, guest speaker. I figure listeners to this show are all into food. A lot of you guys are local. Help me spread the word, because I think that it will be a great way to connect with other like-minded people. We're going to do a section on restaurant reviewing.
Oh, cool.
You know, I was, I'm sure you remember, a critic for a while for Philadelphia Magazine. And so we will perhaps eat together and then write about it.
I think that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, so... We'll see. It's, again, it's like the first time I'm doing something like this in a very long time. And so I have a lot of positive feelings around it. And I think it'll be a great time to learn, connect, and practice. And, of course, eat.
Of course.
Okay. So should we talk about what's for dinner?
Yeah. I want you to – so the topic is rice paper rolls. And how did – I mean, we have never talked about these. How is this possible?
Yeah. I find this crazy because I do love them. And – what I'm referring to when I say rice paper rolls is you'll often see them at Vietnamese restaurants called summer rolls or sometimes spring rolls, even though I don't think that's the correct term, really. Yeah. What it is basically is yummy stuff wrapped up in a very thin rice paper wrapper. They come dried, and even at restaurants, you get them dried, and then you usually will like dip them. I shouldn't say this. Sometimes they come pre-rolled at restaurants, but sometimes you make them yourself. And you sort of just moisten them with water, and then you fill them full of things like rice vermicelli, sometimes tofu, sometimes meat, usually a lot of herbs, sometimes lettuce, sometimes sauce. And I was making them this week because, as we discussed recently, I made those Milk Street Tuesday Night Vietnamese meatballs.
Which are so good.
And I did them exactly as the recipe lays out the first night, but then the next night I did the rice paper rolls. Mm-hmm. And I think I like those even better.
Really?
Do you make them at home ever?
You know, I haven't in a long time. I used to. It used to be one of my favorite things. Like if I was going to have friends over for just like a simple dinner, you know, I'd lay a whole bunch of stuff out. I'd cook some rice vermicelli. I'd have a bunch of shredded lettuce. And we would do like build your own rice paper rolls. Mm-hmm. And I did that because in part when I was a kid, one of my family's favorite Vietnamese restaurants had that as an appetizer. And so we'd go and we'd always have to, you know, get the rice paper, you know, the make your own rice paper mm-hmm. roll situation. And so to me, it represents like this fun communal eating experience. But I haven't done it in years.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine that there's many Weight Watchers points involved, right? Because the paper itself is like, it's practically so non-existent, thin. Yeah. You know? And you can really pack them with vegetables. In the Milk Street Meatballs recipe, they have you make a bunch of shredded carrots and there's lettuce for the lettuce cups and chilies. So like, I just used all that stuff in my rice paper wrap. And I love doing it with meatballs that I made myself from like good local pork, because if I were to eat meatballs in a Vietnamese restaurant, it is never without the guilt of like,
where did this meat come
from? Knowing that it's like some kind of factory farmed meat. I do love to do it with fried tofu though. Yeah. That's one of my favorites, like cutting the tofu into fingers and dredging them in a little potato starch and frying them up crispy. I do love carrots to be involved. I do love cabbage. And then the herbs to me are like,
you gotta have them.
I like mint, basil or Thai basil, and cilantro.
Yeah.
And all the hot sauces. I like sriracha. I like a garlic chili sauce, like in a jar, or a fermented homemade hot sauce. Yeah. So
it's good stuff.
I do. I just recently had them at a restaurant when I was in Palm Springs at, the restaurant was called Rooster and the Pig. It was kind of the best place you went to in Palm Springs, and they had a whole section of them. The night before I got there, they had a delicious sounding West Coast crab one.
Ooh.
With, I think it had sweet potatoes in it also. The night that we were there, we had something, pork meatballs, and they used dates because, of course, everything in Palm Springs has dates in it. it was pretty great. Chicken would be a lovely, chicken or beef, whether you grill it or meatballs are natural.
In the past, I've done it with chicken where I've sauteed it with like a little bit of lemongrass paste and garlic. And so you kind of just quickly cut up the chicken real fine, saute it with in a little bit of oil with the lemongrass paste and garlic and maybe a little bit of like red chili flake or something in there. And then use that as your protein. It's so good.
And if you want to be like artsy with your food, I've seen this, I think, on sites such as 101 Recipes. You know, all the beautiful radishes in the world, like, you can like cut thin,
like watermelon radishes,
pieces of like a watermelon radish and like lay those like against the transparent rice paper. And then you have like a really pretty presentation.
Yeah. I never do stuff like
that. Oh, me neither. But it's an opportunity. If you have could. I know Jackie Botto listens to the show I'll try to remember to link to her Instagram because she has the prettiest food photos.
Yeah,
that sounds like
great.
Something that Jackie would do.
It totally does.
And I don't know how, when we were talking about proteins for these, the classic thing that goes inside them is shrimp.
It's true. And that's the one thing that I always struggle with is because I love these.
Oh, you're allergic to them.
I'm allergic to shrimp. Right. And often places have pre-made summer rolls where, you know, shrimp is the only option.
Right.
And I can never have them.
Yeah.
And I'm very disappointed.
You're allergic to shrimp. And I don't like to cook with or eat shrimp because it is such a hassle ethically to figure out. Like, it's so hard to find like a not raised by slaves in Asia, not harvested from some like polluted American water. Like, it's like shrimp is a super complicated issue.
It is.
But that said, they steam them, they become pink, they're very pretty under a rice paper wrapper.
That's true.
I mean, now we're getting into the cold weather season, so these are perfect for summer. I mean, they're called summer rolls because it's not hot.
But they're also really, I think, you know, if you do them where the vermicelli noodles are still a little bit warm and your protein is warm, there is something really pleasing about the contrast of like the crisp raw vegetables and herbs against those warmer elements.
I like my vermicelli to be cold. I always rinse them. I feel like it's important to rinse them for some reason.
I do that, but I sometimes, if I want that contrast, I'll rinse them under warm water so they stay at least not, you know, they're at least room temperature and not kind of chilled.
I liked my meatballs hot though in this situation. So even though it is a little bit of a summery thing, it's still, especially if you have leftover Vietnamese meatballs, like it's a good idea.
Joy, you are the one who put this on there. You want to tell me about your sheet pan kale and tomatoes?
Yeah, for our how do you make that segment, I wanted to talk about a side dish I made last night for a few reasons. I made this because Dan, and I mean, I'm not trying to shill for Milk Street here, but that's what I'm doing. Like, Dan spied a pesto recipe in the Milk Street magazine, which has now become like the pesto that we make at home.
Uh-huh.
But because it's like his thing, he makes it now. Like, when I make pesto, I just sort of guess it and eyeball it or whatever. But now Dan follows this recipe, which is great because when we have pesto, I don't have to make it. Like, Dan's making it.
Perfect.
But it frees me up to make a side dish, which is what happened last night. I looked in my refrigerator. I had aging cherry tomatoes as well as curly kale that was almost a week old. And so I thought to myself, well, these need to become a side dish for the pesto. And I had no salad greens, which is my usual side dish for pesto. And I was just trying to think about what to do with them. Dan was standing at the stove, so I didn't really want to be like elbow to elbow with him at the stove sautéing kale.
Well, and you guys, when you designed your kitchen, you did it really smartly because you have an oven zone and a stove zone.
That's true.
So you can kind of divide it up.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't have been possible for us to be like at the stove side by side. But anyway, I was thinking of this dish that my sister and her husband make as a side a lot. It's they take a big sheet pan and oil it up and toss like half cabbage, half kale with olive oil, and then put it in the oven at a high temperature until it becomes, the leaves get crispy and brown in some places, but are still tender in other places.
Yeah.
So I just basically wanted to do that with kale and tomatoes. Now, obviously, tomatoes don't become crispy, but they do sort of become juicy. Their flavor is concentrated. They become more savory.
Well, and you still get a little blister on there too, so they kind of caramelize in places as well. So
a little bit, but yeah. As I will tell you in a second, these cooked for a short time, so they didn't didn't get too blistery. What I did was I set the oven to 425, and then I tossed my kale. I took the stems out, and then I tossed my kale leaves and tomatoes with olive oil, salt, pepper, and some chili flakes.
Did you tear the kale leaves or did you kind of leave them in big chunks?
I didn't, you know, I removed the stem. Yeah. So then I have halves and then I put each half in like maybe four pieces.
Okay.
So they were big pieces, but they were pieces.
Yeah.
And then I spread it out on the baking sheet and I had no idea how long it was going to cook. It was only 10 minutes before it was like, I wonder if I should have gone maybe for a slightly lower temperature. But actually it turned out really great because the crispy bits were a wonderful contrast to the pesto. The tomatoes were very juicy. And we did eat the vegetables like on the side of the pasta. But after, as we were cleaning up, Dan was like, we could have just tossed all that together. It would have been very good. I'll definitely do it again.
It sounds really good.
If I didn't have Parmesan in the pesto, I would have liked it with some big shards of Parmesan in there.
Ooh,
I think that would have been good, but I'm definitely not doing a cheese on cheese dinner.
Fair enough. You know what? That makes me think, too, that another thing that would be really great with that is to, at the very end of cooking, maybe dollop a couple spoonfuls of really good ricotta onto the sheet pan and let it warm up with that. And then if you didn't have pesto, then you could just toss all those roasted vegetables and the warm ricotta with pasta.
Oh, you're right. That would be really great. Good. Although Dan would call it a pasta toss and look down his nose at it because you know how he is about that.
Yeah, I can't help you there.
But I do think that would be very good. And even without the pasta, just as a side, it would almost be like pizza without the crust.
Yeah, you could do it with like a crostata too. You know, like toast some pieces of bread and then just heap it on bread with ricotta.
That would be delicious. Be really good. Yes. Or you could top a like a nice thick piece of warm focaccia with that.
Yeah. Okay.
Or you could put it in a stromboli.
Oh my God. And here's one more. You could add some eggs. Like halfway through the cooking, you could break a couple eggs into it and then put it all back in and let the eggs cook in the oven.
And that's like brunch.
Yeah.
That would be very good.
That'd be good. And then it's kind of like a deconstructed shakshuka.
Yes. Well, I mean, one thing that I liked about this dish is we all get into our ruts, the things that we always do. And when it comes to kale and me, there's like only two options. Salad, like thinly shaved and a marinated salad, or sautéed with garlic and olive oil, right?
Yeah.
So I thought it was kind of good for me to take kale out of its kale rut.
Yeah.
And tomatoes too. I don't usually incorporate tomatoes in like a cooked vegetable side like that.
Sounds really good.
So it was kind of like necessity was the mother of invention. Not that it's so, this is not such an original dish.
No, but it did it for you.
It was different. It was different for me. Is there anything that you can think of that you have been in a rut about or that you would like to?
Well, there's one thing that I've been meaning to do because we're in cabbage season now. And everyone, if you've been listening for any period of time, knows we love cabbage. Mm-hmm. But, you know, my default with cabbage is to shave it and either make it into some sort of slaw or to saute it. And in the past, I have gone through phases where I did a lot of roasting of like kale wedges because they get a little bit caramelized.
You mean cabbage?
That's what I mean. Okay. Sorry. Cabbage wedges. So like you cut it into, you know, 8 or 10 wedges. You give it a little generous oil. You put it in the oven and the interior gets really tender and the outside gets a little crisp. Mm-hmm. And like salt is really all you need in that scenario. And I haven't been doing that because I forget. Like when I put the cabbage on my cutting board, I start to go into, you know, like autopilot. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to shred this up and saute it and that'll be delicious. Mm-hmm. But I need to like write a note to myself that the next time I approach a cabbage that I want to roast it.
Yeah.
Because I forget and I know it's so good and I just forget to do it.
You know what else I love with cabbage that I'll have to do soon?
What?
Stuffed cabbage.
Oh, stuffed cabbage.
That's usually just like a once a winter thing because it is time consuming. And also my husband does not like it, but I love it.
You gave me some of your stuffed cabbage once and it was delicious. You know, there was a recipe I was working on last year that I kind of gave up on and I need to come back to it, which was a stuffed cabbage casserole. So all the flavors of cabbage.
Oh, yeah.
But not wrapped. Instead, like shred the cabbage and have it be just something you kind of scoop. And I need to go back to that because it's a good idea. I just didn't get it quite right last year.
I like the idea of it, but at the same time, this is just for my particular personality. Like, I would probably just be wanting it to be stuffed cabbage.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a little bit of a fuss budget.
I do.
I love
that about you, Joy.
When I was making those meatballs from the Milk Street Cookbook, I weighed everyone. They were 28 grams each, and you got 20 of them.
You are amazing.
Just saying.
I do not weigh meatballs, but you know, I'm glad that you're in the world doing that for all of us.
So when I'm making, that's part of what I like about the cabbage rolls is making all of those identical rolls.
I get how satisfying that is. I know if I want to eat it more than once a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, good point.
You know, I like the flavors enough to find different ways to get to it. Okay. So Thanksgiving, it's soon. And we wanted to talk a little bit today about some cookbooks that you might enjoy having on your shelf to help you get started planning, as well as share some of our favorite things that we make every year. So first, the cookbooks. Now, we talk a lot about the Milk Street Tuesday Night Cookbook.
We have.
But I actually want to pull out their other cookbook, the Milk Street, the New Home Cooking one that came out like last year this time, because it's got some really great sides. And one of the things that I spotted in here as I was flipping through recently, and of course I didn't put a bookmark in, but they have got a really delicious sounding sweet potato casserole that's not your traditional. And I will confess, I love a sweet potato casserole. Like once a year I have no objection to kind of like a really sugary one, but I also love the opportunity to have one that's a little bit more savory and, you know, interesting and not so just like all the way sugar.
My love affair with the new book has made me have the impulse to return to the book that came out last year, although I haven't done it yet, I have to say.
It's a really good book. It's so it's a sweet potato gratin, and I just looked it up in the index. So it's got some sugar on top, but it's not as aggressive. And it kind of tempers it with bay leaves. So it tempers the sweetness and really walks a nice line. And it could be something that you've made ahead. So
I like things that get made ahead.
So I recommend this book if you've got a copy to pull it out and look and see what's there. If you're also looking for other interesting sweet potato things, I have a piece coming out in the next issue of Taproot Magazine that is 3 sweet potato dishes that are reinvented for sort of fall eating. And one is a layered, like thinly sliced sweet potato gratin that once it comes out, we'll link to it because
I love gratins.
It's so good. And you layer it with some sauteed Swiss chard and you add some cream and it's just kind of hard to go wrong.
That sounds great.
Yeah. So Another book that I really am excited about for this time of year, written by fellow Pennsylvanians, Kate Winslow and Guy Ambrosino, is the Onions Etc. book. And this is a great one because there is no better vegetable for Thanksgiving than the onion.
I can't believe I don't have this book.
I cannot believe you don't have this
book,
Joy.
And looking at it right now, I'm just noticing the pages are like edged in purple like a red onion.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. And there's so many options here. Like everything, you know, from onions to shallots to scallions to garlic. There's just a lot here. You know, there's pickles. There are, like, look at this, a pearl onion tart tatin.
Mm.
Can you imagine pulling that out at Thanksgiving? Like, this would be a great
one
if
you were... That would be a showstopper.
Yeah, if someone asked you to bring, like, a vegetarian, like, secondary main dish, how gorgeous would that be? So, this is just another book that I really enjoy. I like looking at it. I like the variety in it. You know, I just want to make frizzled leeks now. I would highly recommend, if you've never seen it, to grab a copy and just flip through because it is so beautiful.
I owe myself an online book order.
I think Joy, you need to perhaps consider that one because it's so gorgeous and so versatile. And it's not just for special occasions. Like, there's lots of things in there that you can cook on a weeknight, but it's also got some of that really kind of show-stopping special occasion food.
Holiday inspiration.
Exactly. And then another book that we both love and need to talk about is from our mutual friend, Tara Desmond. It's her book, Choosing Sides. And it's a whole book of side dishes. You cannot go wrong with this book at Thanksgiving because whatever you need, it's going to be here.
It does have something for everyone, a whole buffet of side dishes,
it's
if you
true.
Will.
I just flipped open and there's a legacy cornbread dressing. She's got multiple stuffings and dressings in here. I'm not a good roll baker. I tried last year and they were kind of terrible. So I know she's got several different rolls in here that I'm going to sort of start interviewing and making ahead of time to see which one I can master for Thanksgiving because I really want to do a good job
this
year. I think
when I was a kid, someone in my family would make crescent rolls for Thanksgiving, like Pillsbury crescent rolls. It just like came back to me right now. Maybe it was my Aunt Lisa, but I loved those.
Yeah.
And I would probably still love them today.
I'm sure you would. My mom was not a big fan of like bread at Thanksgiving because she, you know, it's like it's a...
That comment needs no further explanation, in my opinion.
But...
You mean bread beyond the stuffing?
Yeah. She's like, it's a holiday with bread stuffing and mashed potatoes and sometimes a sweet potato. One needs not a roll.
Right.
But my husband's family and his brother's girlfriend always come for the Thanksgiving that I make. They like to have a bread product and I get it. And so I want it to be good as opposed to the rolls I made last year, which looked beautiful but tasted terrible.
Baking is a hard skill. I'm not the best baker.
I'm okay at it, but for some reason a roll is not something I've mastered yet. The other book that I want to talk about for Thanksgiving is...
I've never seen that one.
This is Sam Sifton's Thanksgiving book. And now, I don't always love what Sam Sifton does. I feel like... I remember we went to that panel that he did at IACP talking about newsletters.
Yes.
And he has the full might of the New York Times behind him. And we were two lowly podcasters trying to figure out how to have a podcast strategy. But this is a great book. And,
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Did you ever see there's like a spoof? There's like a Sam Sifton spoof that's like Sam Sifton is depressed and it's like his email. And I actually love his recipes and his tone. I love his recipes.
Yes.
I think he's smart about food. His tone is absurd.
It's a little pretentious.
It's like his level of self-awareness is none.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think he uses the word larder about his own home in all seriousness in his emails. And I'm like... Sam. Anyway,
but there's some really good recipes in this little book, and it's
I'm
small.
Sure there are.
I got mine at a discount bookstore.
I see the 70% off sticker
retail, so it's not an expensive book, but it's really nice. The other thing, one more thing that I want to mention. I'm sorry, Joy. I've been talking
no,
so much.
No, please do, because you know I'm boycotting Thanksgiving this year. Basically,
I know. So. I have a really great gravy recipe, and we ran it – was it just last year
in Edible Philly.
Last year in Edible Philly. So we'll link to that because it is such a good system for gravy, and what's really great about it is you can do almost all of it ahead of time. You can toast the flour a week before. You can make your turkey stock ahead of time, And it becomes a really great way to easily make a lot of delicious gravy come Thanksgiving, because you don't want to run out of gravy. That is the key thing. It pulls it all together. You can't run out of gravy. And so my technique, it's really my dad's. He learned it from his mother. It is a third generation, proven, time-tested gravy situation. And it'll mean that you have flavorful gravy that lasts for as long as your turkey lasts. So we'll link to it, and hopefully you'll make it.
Does that recipe make a gallon of gravy?
I think for the article, I scaled it for a quart, but you can scale it up. My dad makes a gallon of gravy every year.
That's so crazy to me. I love gravy as much as the next person. And I'm sure there'll be gravy where I'm going, but I'm not making it. Or maybe I will end up making it. I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm just like, I have my hand off the wheel.
That's okay.
Going along for the ride.
Some years you got to do that. Okay, so
back to the Milk Street meatballs.
It is totally where this started. Yes. So we're going to talk what we're loving right now. I'm loving fish sauce. It is so flavorful. Granted, it's a little stinky, but it is such an easy way to kind of boost flavor, bring more kind of succulence to something.
Those meatballs call for 5 tablespoons fish sauce. That's the most that I've ever put in any recipe I've ever made. No table salt, I might add. All of that saltiness comes from the fish sauce, which is its primary quality.
Yeah.
Saltiness.
And then you also make a dipping sauce with more fish sauce.
Oh, well, it's 3. I think it's 3 tablespoons in the meatballs and 2 in the sauce, or vice versa.
Still, it's a lot of fish sauce.
Plenty. It's like I ran out. I'm at the end of my bottle, which I thought was going to last forever.
Well, and I ended up opening a new bottle for that recipe. And because it's open in my refrigerator, I have been using it for everything. You know, we talked several episodes back about this massive bok choy situation I had. I sauteed those bok choy and I added fish sauce. I've been adding it to sauteed cabbage. I've been pouring it into soup because I have this giant bottle that's open in my refrigerator. I'm putting it in everything and I'm loving it. Like, it's bringing great joy to my life.
My favorite stealth use of fish sauce is to just put like a drop or two in guacamole.
Whoa.
It does not taste at all fishy. I mean, we're really just talking about like 2 drops.
Yeah.
But it adds like a depth of flavor. Very good.
I'm going to try that. That sounds amazing.
Just like a tiny bit of fish sauce and a wide variety of things adds like a real savoriness, a real like umami quality that few other things can do without making it taste fishy. I mean, you're not talking about tablespoons or even teaspoons. We're talking about drops.
Well, and I don't feel like fish sauce actually tastes that fishy. I mean, it's a fermented, liquid at this point. So it's certainly made from fish, but it's fermented and then strained enough that it's really just kind of the liquid gold that comes from all the, get that flavor. But it's funky smelling, certainly.
Yes. I find that I have a hard time washing it off my hands.
Yeah.
It lasts forever.
You smell like it forever, but it's worth it for the flavor.
It is such good flavor. And certainly anything that like leans in with an Asian ingredients or an Asian direction, it's welcome. It can be used in combination with soy sauce to great effect.
Yeah.
You can sneak it into a lot of different like savory things just to enhance it, like as a secret ingredient and a secret weapon. What about brands? Do you have a favorite brand?
I tend to buy either the Red Boat, like number 41, or there's
like a
3 crab.
I think it's 3 squid.
Maybe it's 2 crab.
Maybe there's a squid one and a crab one.
Yeah, I buy either the crab one or the Red Boat one. Yeah,
although I've been known to buy like the Thai Kitchen brand in a pinch too. So if you have tips for using your fish sauce, places that you use it in a secret or not so secret way, tell us in the show notes or tell us in the comments for the show notes for this episode. And before we go, if you know someone who you think might listen to this podcast, do them a service, take their phone, and show them how to subscribe and listen. Just sign them right up for this free podcast, and they will thank you. Maybe they'll even invite you over for dinner. and that's it for this week's episode of Local Mouthful. Our thanks go out to Dan Call for editing the show, to Saul Rosenbaum for designing our logo, and to Raina Rose for providing the music. And thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, make sure to subscribe via iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Local Mouthful. Sign up for our newsletter, catch up on past episodes, and check out our show notes at localmouthful.com. Until next time, happy eating.